Hello and welcome to Podcast of the Woods. As always, I am your host, Boomer, and joining me is the wonderful and amazing Gabby. Gabby, how are you doing this evening?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing quite well, as I often am during these times, because it is my pick tonight, and I'm excited to talk about the subject that we have. But before we do, I am also excited because we have a very special guest with us tonight, and it is Ren. Ren and I have been interacting on Twitter for at least a couple of years now that I remember. But we are so happy to have you today, and this has been a long time coming, my friend.
Yes, it has. I am excited to be here. Like you said, it's like we've been chit-chatting about like me jumping on for a while, and I'm excited that you brought me on. And I won't spoil, but I think it was kind of funny that the first movie that you bring me on for is not actually a horror movie. It's like more horror adjacent, but I'll let you do all like the plugs for it and whatnot. I won't take your thunder.
It's funny because Gabby and I have been having like these conversations about like what is and what isn't a horror flick. And I mean, horror is whatever it is to different people. Like to me, this one is straight up horror, but I've heard that before, that this one is not a horror flick. I mean, there is a lot of people that I respect that's like, well, I saw The Devil. It's more, you know, of a revenge thriller than it is a horror flick.
I feel like I lump it into those movies. Like if we want to stay with Asian, it's like Itchy the Killer and Old Boy. They're not horror films, but like horror fans love those two films. And if you want to go something more like US related, it's like Seven. Like, I think it falls into that. Like, it's not necessarily a horror movie, but it's like but horror fans love it. So like, I'm stoked on it. I'm glad that you asked me to come on for this because it's been like 5 years since I watched this film. So I was kind of excited to get back in, and some of the stuff I forgot about it. So
nice.
Like,
awesome. Awesome. Gabby, where are you coming down on this one? Is this a horror flick to you, or is this a thriller horror adjacent film to you?
To me, this is horror.
Okay. Yeah. I feel the same way. Ren, when you said Seven's not a horror, it was like we literally have been like talked about that one this afternoon. I'm like, Seven is a horror. Like I my mom took me to see that movie, and it had quite the effect on me when I was younger. So it's awesome to see how like, you know, different mindsets, different people, different backgrounds, like the things that affect us all.
I mean, I'm not mad if anyone says that Seven or this or even Itchy the Killer being a horror film. Like, I just look at it as a little bit removed from it. But it's, you know, it's tomato tomato.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe you're just tougher than I am. Before we get into this properly, though, Ren, why don't we start out and you know, just introduce yourself to the listeners. You know, who you are. What it is that you you do in the podcasting world. Just kind of plug your wares a little bit.
Formally my name is John, but everyone just calls me by my last name because you know too many Johns in the world. So Ren it is. I'm a menace on the internet. I bounce around on all the socials because I have nothing better to do at work. RenXXX on all that stuff if you want to follow nonsense. I am a monthly co-host on the Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks podcast. We do like a monthly roundtable discussion. It's usually like a topic of choice, whether it's top five, this, or maybe we just discuss a movie. We've been doing a lot of top fives recently. We did top five creature features where they just recorded a top five extreme films, which I wasn't a part of. But it's a good time. It's around more roundtable discussion. Normally Tim hosts that show himself. And it's interviews with people that are in the music world or sometimes within the movie world. Like he just recently interviewed Steve McKeon, who did the score for Evil Dead Rise. But then he has, you know, people from anywhere from Anthrax to like local like punk and hardcore bands. He interviews them and gets their like relationship with horror movies and like where they came in with it and like how does that affect them on their day to day? Does it affect their music writing? It's a lot of those interviews are very fascinating, and they come from all different angles and different backgrounds and different, you know, places of the world. So it's always fun to hear like what brought people to this like one like-minded like hive mind. And then occasionally I pop up on the House of Screams, which I know that Candy's been on here a few times, so you guys are well aware of the madhouse that's over there. So,
Yeah. Very, very good friend of ours, Candy, the final girl.
yes.
And yeah, guys, you owe it to yourself to check out the Horflex Guitar Picks podcast. They do some amazing things, like I said, or like Ren was saying, they do, interviews, they do movie reviews, they do music reviews, just all kinds of things on the Spectre. And it's really interesting. And I just not too long ago, they hit a major milestone, 200th episode, which is, I mean, that blows my mind. It really does. So congratulations. Congratulations to you all. That is fantastic.
Yeah, I was thankful that Tim, had me bring on, like, that's his baby. He's been doing it. I think he did like 130 episodes before I even like got on there once. So that's all Tim Mills. I'll give it, give him his flowers. But yeah, it's been a fun ride. I love listening to interviews that I'm not a part of because, as I stumbled upon Podcasts in the Woods, it's, I like listening to these things. I like being, when it's not me, I like it. I get to hear, everyone else's opinions. And sometimes I yell at my car stereo when I'm like, what, why are you guys now? But it's all good.
So before we get into the movie properly, I just wanted to know, because obviously, Gabby, this is my pick. I'm a big fan, whether it's Eastern or Western, their takes on this subgenre of revenge films. Are you a fan, or is this something that, like, have you seen a bunch of these, or is it just something that you really don't care about?
I mean, who doesn't love a good revenge story? They're great if they're done right. I think a lot of them are done hammy or over the top. I think that when it comes to a realistically done revenge film, it has to be very subtle, but at the same time, very shocking. And I think that to find that very delicate balance is difficult, to say the least, almost impossible. And I think that when a film does that, when they make it realistic enough that you're sitting there going, this could never happen, I would do that, is genius. That shows the mark of a good writer, a good director, very good actors.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. So not like the biggest Machete fan, stuff like that. What about you, Ren? What's your take on the revenge subgenre?
I mean, as a subgenre, it's not one I normally like seek out. It's just usually one that I like stumble upon. You think of classics like I Spit on Your Grave is probably like the ultimate revenge flick. So that's memorable. That's one that stands out. Last House on the Left, when the parents get their revenge. So like, I don't really like. It's not something I'm like, oh, it's a revenge film. Like I go seek it out. But I have found some like classic revenge films, like the two I just mentioned. And I Saw the Devil, I believe, falls into that category as well as something that it's a, I think it's like a must see. And I've noticed that in the realistic or the more serious tone revenge films, they typically tend to be like uber violent. And sometimes I think they teeter like, I Spit on Your Grave and Last House on the Left specifically, and even this film teeter sometimes on being a little too much at times that it takes me, it kind of starts to take me out of a little bit because I would rather see, especially in certain those three films I just mentioned, I would rather see the revenge be realistic because I feel like the killings in those films or the incidents that happen. And I Spit on Your Grave, it's obviously rape, unfortunately. I feel like those are serious subject matters where they need to be handled seriously. And so if it starts to get like too gory and too over the top and zany, like it starts to remove me from it because now it doesn't seem realistic.
Okay.
But
Really?
I do like Machete. So like sometimes, but I think Machete's like a different type of film altogether. Like it's meant to be like completely crazy. So if you go in with that mindset, like this movie's just going to be off the wall batshit for the entire time, then I can get on board with that because then it's never serious. It's just crazy the whole time. They have to find, as Gabby said, there has to be a balance. There has to be.
Apparently, yeah, I did that, Machete.
You're cutting out. What did you say, Gabby? Oh, I
I said
said.
apparently I didn't get that about Machete.
Oh yeah. Machete is like so ridiculous. I mean, it's got Steven Seagal as the
I know. I've basically seen
it's,
it.
It's basically a cartoon.
Yeah.
it's so stupid. Like I really enjoy the subgenre, and I don't know what it is about it, but there's just something like over the years that has just drawn me to it. And I have like really sought everything out. Like I've seen, of course, you know, the highlights, Old Boy, and you know, some of the stuff, but the Vengeance trilogy, I've liked, and I really enjoy like difference between like East and West. And I was wondering like if that's have you ever like really you know, have you dived into like the difference between the way that like Western culture usually handles like revenge films, where it's like a revenge fantasy type thing, whereas you know, the Eastern culture, there's always like these they're dealing with the consequences, and there's always something to be paid for that, for the revenge, the cost of it.
I never noticed that, but now that you're talking about it, my brain started running through the Vengeance trilogy, and I saw The Devil Versus, you know, the way that they do stuff here. And it is, you're right. Like it seems to be like, there's always more, I feel like there's more depth to the way that, the Eastern cultures handle it as opposed to here. Like here is pretty straightforward. Like I said, I'm just going to keep going back to the well on it, but with I Spit on Your Grave and Last House on the Left, they're pretty straightforward in how it's just like, nope, this happened, and we're just going to brutalize these people. Whereas, you know, you take something like Old Boy, that's a heavy film. Like I saw this movie is a heavy film. Like there's more to think about when dealing with those two movies in particular than it is the way that they do things in the US. But I haven't, like, I never really thought about it, because the revenge subgenre isn't something it's just something I stumble upon every now and then, that I haven't like thought about that. But now that you said it, I always get more out of like the Vengeance trilogy and I Saw the Devil than I would say any of the stuff that's like in the US, because I feel like, as you said, it's more fantasy type about getting the revenge, whereas there's more of, you know, a question of morality, like with the Asian films. Like, I feel like they really like play with how far do you go with your morals before you become like before you become the antagonist yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, this film does that like really, really well. We're going to get into that. One more final kind of intro question. So we are talking about Asian horror today. Well, Asian film, we'll just say Asian films today, which I absolutely love. And we'll turn it to Gabby first this time. Gabby, are you a subtitle or a dub person?
No, I don't do dubbing. No, I can read. I can have subtitles.
Yeah.
I think there is nothing more obnoxious than somebody who refuses to watch subtitles. There are people out there that will be the pretentious a-holes that'll be like, well, I prefer a movie that's foreign. It's smarter. It's more, you know, thought out, or whatever their opinion is, that they have to push that on you. However, I'm still going to watch Sleepaway Camp every chance I get. And I don't think that subtitles make or break a movie. I just think that people who refuse to experience something that might be way out of their wheelhouse and might become one of their favorites just because it's not in their native language, they're not going to watch it. If I wanted to read a book, I'd read a book. Well, go read a fucking book, loser. You haven't read a book in 20 years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. There's a lot of people that I've talked to. Well, I say a lot of people. There's a few people that I've talked to, and yeah, that have that kind of mindset. And I'm like, no, you know, there's so much good stuff out there. You know, if you're willing to put in the time. And I understand like preferring one over another. That's not a big deal to me. But you're right. Like, if you absolutely refuse to watch something that's in a foreign language, that kind of breaks my heart a little bit, because there's so much stuff out there that I love in the foreign film world. Good thing of the word. What about you, Ren? Are you a dub or a sub person?
I will never watch a dub film except for the old martial arts films, like, you know, the Wu-Tang Clan and like stuff like that. But because I think it takes away the emotion. I would rather hear the actor in their purest form, like, handle it. And as Gabby said, I can read. And usually within like 3 minutes of the film, well, at this point, I don't even realize I'm reading anymore. But it takes like maybe 3 minutes before I'm like, it's like second nature, and I don't even really pay attention to the fact that I am reading. But I hate seeing films where there's an American actor, like an American voice actor, trying to portray the same emotion that's on screen, and it's not, because if you have a really good foreign actor, the dubbing is going to kill whatever emotion that they're trying to do. And I want to hear things in the native language. Like, I want to experience the cultural stuff. Like, I love foreign horror for the fact that I get to see what scares other cultures. I get to see what their ghosts and their monsters are. Like, what messes them up? Like, we know what our ghosts are here, but like, I want to know what the other, like, I want to know the folklore of other countries. I want to, you know, so the idea of taking it out and like making it American or whatever, even if it's an English person dubbing it, like, just it ruins it so much. Like, I won't watch a film. If I see a film in dub, I won't watch it. It has to get some like amazing, like, this is a perfect 10 out of 10, like, it's going to change your life movie, which I haven't even come across, that is dubbed, for me to watch it in dubbed.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. And yeah, you're right. Like, there's nothing worse than them trying to interpret the emotion. Although, well, maybe them not trying to interpret the emotion, and they're just like reading lines. It's like somebody just hands them the script and doesn't give them any context. It's like, here, say this for $500. Well, with the exception, like you said, of the martial arts films or the Godzilla films, which I grew up with. You know, to me, like, I still love the dub of those because that's what I grew up with.
Well, I think there's some like nostalgic to that. I mean, that was how many years ago? Like, I think there's something to be said about like the old martial arts films, the Godzilla, like the Gojira films. Like, I think that it adds to the charm of those films. They're not the same as, like, if I saw this movie dubbed, I would have turned it off. Like, I would have never watched it. Like High Tension is a movie that I saw dubbed, and like, I liked that movie until, like, you know, the twist happens. But like, the whole time I'm like, man, I just wish this was in French. Like, why is this dubbed? This is terrible. And the actors, the voice actors that were doing the dubbing, were like, they were robots. And I was like, this is, yeah, it's so, yeah, I can't do dub.
Yeah, I'm with you, and especially on that movie. Yeah, I get that. It's really weird. All right, the IMDb for I Saw the Devil: A secret agent exacts revenge on a serial killer through a series of captures and releases. The cast for this movie, and here we go. Boomer's famous reading of the cast in foreign film. Lee Byung Hun as Si Soo Hyun. Choi Min Sik as Jang Hyung Chol, Jeon Gu Han as the squad chief Yang, Hu Jin Chun as the sectional chief O, and others. We're gonna stop it right there because I am not going to embarrass myself any further. So, Red, we'll start with you this time. So this is the first time that you have not like this time, but we'll go back to the first time that you ever watched I Saw the Devil. Had you heard about it before? Did you just stumble across this? What was your first time watch like?
So I remember it getting a lot of buzz amongst my friends, and the only thing I knew about it, and what ultimately sold me on it, was it's directed by the director who did my favorite Asian horror film of all time, A Tale of Two Sisters, and it stars Mr. Old Boy himself, Choi Min Sik. So I was like, there's two elements that I needed to see, like, combined, and he plays the villain, so I was really intrigued. I forgot how I saw it. I want to say I watched it on Netflix, like, early, but it was getting a lot of buzz in like my circle of friends, and they were saying, if you like those films, like, you have to watch this. It's brutal, you know. There any you know adjective that you could that something I would latch on to, it was described as. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna sit down and watch this film. So I watched it probably. It wasn't when it first came out. I want to say it probably maybe about 10 years ago, like 2013, and I was blown away by it. Like, The idea of the catch and release was like new to me because I know in most revenge films, like, oh, well, he caught the guy, like, he's just going to beat the hell out of him and kill him, and that's it. Or he's going to capture him, he's going to, the killer will get away, and then it'll be like this cat and mouse for the rest of the film. And it wasn't like that at all. So that like threw me for a loop, and I was really intrigued. And it, and I remember the first time I watched it being like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I would have just killed the guy. Like, he killed my wife. Like, I would have just killed this guy like right away. But I kept like, and it's, and something unrealistic like that normally like screws me up, and I, and it can kind of like take me out of the film a little bit. But there was something about the way he was doing it, and the fact that he was still allowing him to do some of the evil deeds and all that, like, in for like the whole time. And when it ended, I was like, it's over? Like, already? Like, I wanted like 2 more hours of them just like beating the shit out of each other every, you know, 20 minutes. But no, the first time I was absolutely blown away. And as soon as I saw it, I started telling everyone, like, you got to see this movie. I started trying to hype it amongst like the people who liked like films like Ichi the Killer and Old Boy. I, you know, I tried to sell, I'm like, the guy, he's from Old Boy, like Old Boy himself. He's like in this movie, like, watch this movie. And a whole bunch of people start watching it, and now it's like, you know, growing like wildfire. And pretty much anyone I know that is a, that like watches like horror movies or like, you know, action flicks has seen this movie at this point, and they're all like, this movie was amazing. I don't know why it didn't get released wide in the US. Like, you know, there's, so that was my first experience with it.
Yeah, nice. And I remember exactly what you were talking about, kind of, like kind of the snowball effect that this this film had. So it was released, you know, to very little fanfare, and then as people began, more and more people began to watch it, and like, oh, you have got to see this movie, it's fucking insane. Was just blown away by like just all the stuff that I watched and had never seen anything like this before. And it seems like, you know, you hear movies like 2 hours, 22 minutes long, and it's like, oh my God, that's kind of long. But yeah, it's worth every single minute that you spend with this film. It's amazing to me, and it's still amazing to me to this day. Before we get into this though, got to give the trigger warning. We're gonna dive into, you know, not, we're not gonna go by, you know, plot point by plot point or anything, but we're gonna have this to, you know, discussion. This movie does contain, like, if you're thinking about watching this, if you've never seen it, it does contain, you know, sexual assault, sexual violence, some very, very graphic violence, all kinds of crazy stuff in this film. So just a bit of a trigger warning on this movie. If any of those things upset you, or you're not prepared for that, be warned. And, you know, we were probably going to touch on some of those subjects as we go along. So if that is something that affects you, then you can turn this one off and find a different episode, or just skip this one. But with that in mind, all right, here we go. One of the most unique aspects in this story is that catch and release.
Idea, like, I had never seen it before, and I don't recall that I've seen it since. The idea of catching this criminal and then, you know, like obliterating him for a little bit and then letting him go, and just like, you know, eavesdropping on his conversations to like make sure, like, oh, when he fucks up again, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna, you know, obliterate this guy one more time. Like, I'm just gonna keep doing it. And it's, it started, I was like, okay, I get it. Like, there's fate's worse than death. And like, constantly, like, every time this guy wants to make a misstep, you know, essentially the devil is going to be at his door and, you know, just pummel him. And like, and not even just pummel him. There's like, you know, I mean, if can I get right into like one of the scenes? Can I,
Yeah,
like,
no,
all
yeah,
right.
go ahead. Spoilers. Yeah.
The Achilles scene
Oh, yeah.
is the most uncomfortable scene in the movie. And like it's the one scene I knew it was coming, and I still like winced like watching it, because it's, it, the camera doesn't cut, it is brutal. Like, there's Achilles slashing scenes in other movies. You think of like Pet Sematary and stuff like that, that you're like, oh, that's, and it's over and done with. This is like, it takes like a minute for him to like cut this tendon, and when he cuts it, he doesn't just cut it, he like rips it. It's like, it's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, he does all that to like torture this guy. But like, I started being intrigued, and like I said, sometimes like when it becomes like too fantasy for me, it takes me out of it in a revenge film. But I started getting really intrigued in the idea that, you know, he's letting this guy go, and the guy is starting his, you know, monstrosities when he lets him go. Like, he does sexually assault that nurse before he gets his Achilles. And you, so like, he lets him go to a point and he's still causing damage to other people. And it's like, at what point, like, I was really like the whole play on morality with that catch and release aspect. It's like, at what point does your revenge stop trumping like the safety of other people? Because now you're putting your soul, you're like, I'm mad that he killed my loved one, so I'm going to focus on him, and everyone else around doesn't matter. And I think I support his idea of like just torturing this guy, because I get that revenge aspect. But I started, you know, what's the phrase? If you stare too long in the abyss stares back. You know, it's like one of those types like scenario. And I thought the catch and release aspect really played on like really heavily played on the morality of this film. And it was very integral to that questioning, that dynamic, like having the audience like sit there and question their own morality. So I think the catch and release, I'm glad that I've never seen it before and it was so effective in this movie. And I'm glad that it's not something, I don't want to say it all the time now. Like, and you know how like American films particularly, like they steal an idea, they just do it. They're like, oh, I'm going to do this. And now like the next 10 movies, I'll do the same right. thing.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that like it's very unique to this film. Maybe in like, you know, a couple of years down the road, you know, when it's like 15, 20 years removed from that film, maybe doing something similar, not exactly the same, but like, you know, another type of that catch, like play on morality would be, you know, well appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing that this film is 13 years old. That still blows me away. It doesn't seem like that should be the case. But something that I noticed, because this is one of my favorite films of all time. Spoiler alert, you know, there you go. Ratings are out the window. Fuck it. Something that I've noticed on rewatch. So you're right. Like this movie completely changes on rewatch, right? Because the first time that you're watching it, you're kind of cheering on the protagonist. We haven't seen this before. We haven't really at least to this extent. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but of course there's probably something out there where this has happened before. Hey, in 1972's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, I've never seen anything like this before. So when he first starts enacting his revenge on this like fucking terrible person, right? I go back to what I'm comfortable with and that revenge mentality. And I'm like, yeah, get him, you know. But I don't know if you've ever noticed it. It's kind of something subtle that the film does. But as the film progresses, the more that he lets him go, the worse that it gets for everyone else. Like every single time it gets progressively worse until his family is, well, you know, his father-in-law and his sister-in-law and everything are just raped and slaughtered. And that's the culmination of everything. But it just kind of like it build the consequences for his actions kind of subtly build and build, you know, it just a little bit each time to where you're right. You touched on how he starts to assault the nurse and she's never going to be the same again after that. I mean, it's terrible what happens to her. And he doesn't get there in time to completely save her like he did the first time. So again, that girl is traumatized. I mean, there's no getting away from that. I'm not saying that's okay.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is it progressively gets worse as the film goes along. Did you ever have you noticed that aspect of it?
I didn't notice that on the first try. That was actually something I picked up on watching it the last 2 days now is that the killer Choi Min Sik, his bystanders, the quote unquote innocent bystanders, they start to get it way worse. It's almost like as if the agent, I'm not going to say their names, he doesn't like, especially once he loses the tracker, like now it's like all bets are off because it's like, how is he going to find this guy? And only he finds him because he gives himself up. And but he's like, I'm going to do one last like horrible thing before I turn myself in. And it's like this whole like I started noticing, I'm like, oh man, like everyone is getting it like way worse. And it's, and that's like that whole thing is like, at what point does like, once you start to see like when he goes to the cannibal like family, like when he goes to visit his friend and then he finds him and he messes those two up and whatnot, like at that point you're like, all right, he's part of some weird group of people that are also eating people. Maybe I should just cut this off and like end this guy right now and then, you know, so no one else gets hurt, and he doesn't. And I it just, as you said, like the antagonist's like last act is his most brutal of the film. Well, sans the beginning, but like it's his most brutal act since he was caught. And then, you know, and I, it's crazy. Like I like watched it with a different lens this time. Like I started getting more mad at the protagonist because I'm like, in reality, this movie should have been 40 minutes long. He should have killed him when he first found them. Yeah. Like, okay, I figured out he's the killer and that's it. Like, I'm just going to wreck this dude. I'm going to pulverize him for a couple days and let him suffer. And then I'll end him. Like I would have been like, that would have made sense if the movie was an hour long and that's all it was. But so on second viewing, I started getting more angry about the protagonist and like what he was doing to affect all these innocent people that just got caught up in the like chaos that was this revenge, like, you know, idea. So yeah. So I did not pick up on the first try. I was just kind of like, when's he going to finally kill this guy? Like I didn't think about all the stuff that was going on around. I just knew he was doing horrible things. I never picked up on the fact that it was getting worse for everybody until this viewing that I watched in the last 2 days.
Yeah. It really is amazing. And this is what kind of makes it so effective for me, because, you know, again, like you, exactly like the first time I'm watching it, kind of along for the ride, I'm like, yeah, I hate that guy and killing. And I kind of notice it maybe like subconsciously, you know, mm-hmm. you notice things are ramping up until it just goes bonkers, you know, at the end, until he just his final hurrah. But on rewatches, so especially this time, I don't know what it was about this time, but it's like, you kind of, there are times in movies where you kind of almost will things to be differently or to go differently. And so, you know, when he's holding the rock like over his head, I'm like, you know, I know it's not going to happen. I know he's not going to kill him, but it's like, you just
do it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, this is one of those films for me that just kind of like puts me in that mindset. There's been very few that have affected me on that kind of like emotional level to where it's like I'm almost willing the characters to do different things, and even though that I obviously know it's not going to happen. Has a movie ever affected you in that way?
I'm trying to think. When I get put on the spot, like I try to go through my like willing people. I mean, I find myself like, because I'm not like some, I just got asked a question today about, you know, how would I survive horror movies? And I was like, well, I wouldn't go in the basement. That's how I would survive the horror movie. I wouldn't investigate the sound. I would just walk out the front door and go home. So like, I find myself willing, like I always know what I would do. And I understand that like stupid mistakes have to happen in order for like horror movies to even happen, or the movies would be 5 minutes long. So this, I don't know, like maybe something like Silence of the Lambs or something like that would have, like, I'm trying to think, it has to definitely have like an element of mystery to it, mm-hmm. that a film would make me want to like, no, just go through there. If you just go through there, it's like the answer. Like, I just know that when I watched this movie in particular the second time around, I was like, all right, guy, you got to kill him. Like you're causing too much collateral damage here. So like, and as you said, like, I know that he's not going to do it because one, I've seen the movie before, and two, I know there's 45 more minutes left of the film. So if he kills him now, like, what are we going to do for 45 minutes? Watch him drink coffee. But like, so I got a little frustrated on this recent viewing. And this isn't the second time I watched. This is probably like the third or fourth time, but like this most recent, I like, because I was going to really review it, I like watched it with like a fine tooth, like, or like a fine lens. And I started getting a little frustrated. I was like, maybe they drug this on a little bit like too long. Like Gabby touched up on it. Like when she briefly had an opportunity to say anything, she said that, you know, she was like, yeah, this was great, but I kind of got over it like at a certain point. And I think I started on this viewing, got to that point where I was trying to, you know, as you said, you want to will it to like speed up a little bit and like just kill him now. And that was the first time that happened for this film. It took a couple viewings for it, but I definitely got to that point on this one where I was trying to like will the movie to almost be over. Though I still want to watch more, like, because I know all the stuff that's coming and I still want to see some of those scenes, particularly the end scene, because I think the end, the dialogue that they have before he leaves is intense.
Oh, there's so much. Okay. There's so much. Yeah. I'm trying to compartmentalize because it's like, I mean, you've stepped on like about 10 different things in my notes. Yeah. And so, which is fine. That's good.
That's what
good.
I do.
No, that's
I'm injecting chaos into your formula.
It's the age of the chaos. Rim. Yeah. No, I'm just trying to figure out where to transition because, there's so many things. All right, let's talk about the protagonist. We touched on the protagonist and kind of the frustration with him. And so for me, like this film is kind of a take on what it takes to break a person, or what it takes to take somebody who is a good person. Because we see at the very beginning of this film, he kind of has this really, really sweet relationship with his fiance. You know, of course, he's a special agent. He's a very tough guy. But you know, he kind of like sneaks off to the bathroom so he could sing to her and that kind of thing. So they have, you know, they have this really wonderful relationship. And then we see the breakdown that he has when he loses her. So it's obvious that, you know, she means so much to him, and not only her, but her entire family. You know, he respects her father, you know, he cares about her sister. And so, he is legitimately, and I don't know what, I'm sure if he's not, I mean, he's obviously he's not our antagonist, but he's not as far removed from him. You know, it's kind of uncomfortable how close that the two are by the end, where, you know, he tortures the antagonist and then ends up killing him, basically sacrificing him in front of his own family. Now, you know, you could argue, and I want, you know, see what your take is on this. His parents, okay, you know, I mean, maybe it's like, you know, you raised him in a way, or abused him, or did something, and maybe they're hinting at that turned him into what he is. But his son, did not deserve that, and so it's not like, I mean, he's not that far removed from being a villain in the film, and so I really, really found it interesting this film's take on takes to turn a good person into a bad person. And you're right, like I was, by the end of this, I was like frustrated, and I kind of like really, really pissed off at our you know, in quotations, you know, protagonist. I mean, what was your take on that whole thing, or the themes, or, you know, what themes in general just stuck out to you about this?
Well, I think the name of the film, I Saw the Devil, is a really good thing, because there's, you know, in order to kill the devil, you have to become the devil. And I think that really, you know, at the end of the film, it's not a happy ending, like, in any way. Even though he gets his revenge, it's like, you're not left, you don't walk out of the theater or out of your living room or wherever you saw it, you don't walk out, you know, going, oh, I'm glad, you know, he got his revenge, that was, you know, a-okay, like, let's go get dinner. Like, you're like, fuck, man, like, that dude's soul was corrupted just as much as the killer's was. Like, now, the killer, you could argue, is worse, because that guy, you know, in his final dialogue, he says, like, I don't believe in suffering, I feel no pain. He has, like, no moral compass. He just does evil things. And our protagonist, at least, has emotion. Like, there's a reason why he does it. One thing I want to touch on is the beginning of that film, as you said, that it's only minutes. It's like, what is it, maybe 10 minutes before she's killed? So, like, for 10 minutes, they have to sum up this guy's they have to accurately portray this relationship to the point where this guy will go to these depths, or the movie doesn't make sense. If you don't really get that first, like, relationship out, like, perfect, the rest of the film, you're like, why is he going like crazy for this? It's like, it's his girlfriend, it's his fiance, like, whatever. Like, you're not, like, you could argue that, yes, it's his wife, it's his fiance, it's his girlfriend, like, he cares deeply about her. But I think, as you said, the singing part, I think that him showing his soft side from being, like, the special, like, this prim, proper, like, special agent, he's going through all the motions as he's talking to her, he's checking his microphones, he's, like, really in the zone for his work, but he's like, no, she means a lot, I'm going to sneak off, I'm going to try to do this, like, sing. And I think that sing, just those, like, three lines that he sings, like, that's it. It drove it home. He's trying to calm her down. It's real sweet. So when she gets it, you're like, oh no. Like, and when he first realizes that it's her, when he shows up on that, like, chaos scene, when they're, like, finding all the body parts in the water and whatnot, and he realizes it's her dying, you see it in a split second. He goes from completely heartbroken to boom, like a void. He immediately goes into that mode, like, I'm gonna kill the fucker that did this. Like, and you watch that actor sold that scene perfectly, because you see him break, he starts covering his mouth, like, the eyes start welling up, there's, like, tears starting to come, and then all of a sudden it, like, turns off and he's, like, straight face again, and you're like, okay, like, he had his mental, that's where the mental break happened. Like, he's basically become a psycho, and he's gonna go, he's Liam Neeson now, and now he has specific, you know, skills to do certain things, and now he's gonna go fucking get this guy. And I really like those two aspects of the film right in the beginning, and I think they make the rest of the film make sense. You're watching a guy spiral. Like, he still hasn't come to terms with the fact that his wife is dead, so he's constantly still like dealing with that. And I think that's why he kind of like catches and release, because he's like, I don't want to kill this guy right now, because then that part's done and I can't get that over with. He's like, if that's over with, then I have to deal with the other stuff. So I think he releases him so that he keeps having something to like almost distract him.
And at
the detriment of, you know, society around us. But I think at the end of the movie, one could argue that he is a villain. Like, I don't even need to know a backstory. Like, we don't get enough to say like, oh, the parents raised him wrong or anything like that. That doesn't matter to me. It's the fact that his parents, who clearly he hasn't seen in a while, and his son, who he hasn't seen in a while, witness his death. Like, what did they do to deserve that? Like, if anything, our protagonist should have realized that leaving like the loved ones left behind, like all you're doing is leaving a nightmare for them. Like, he had to deal with that. He saw his fiance in pieces. Why does someone else that isn't innocent have to also see? Like, he should have just killed him, chopped him up into pieces and threw him in the river, and that would have made more sense. And then if the parents came home and they were just like, oh, he's not here, he's missing, and that's like, I could deal with that more. But the fact that he killed him in front of the family, particularly the son. I mean, parents, you know, obviously you feel bad for the parents. Parents are watching their son's head roll down a, you know, down the floor. But the son, it's like it's all, that's unforgivable. So yeah. So when the movie ends, and like, I feel for him, because he had like, there is that good scene, like after it happens, if he takes the earbuds out and he heard it, he has that release of emotion. Like, it's done now. Now he can finally grieve for his fiance. But I'm like, you were just as bad as him. Like, I don't feel like, yes, I feel sorry for you that you lost your loved one, but you went about it the way wrong way. So like, when that's over, it's like, everyone's the devil. Like, I saw the devil in both of them. Like, it's a really heavy movie.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. It really is. And it's one of my, like, that's why it ends up being one of my favorite films, is, you know, it is so heavy, and it does like affect me on, like I said, that emotional level. So we talked about our protagonist. Like, let's talk about our antagonist, or just the acting in general in this movie, because everybody in this movie is fucking acting their ass off. I mean, you kind of explained how well that the special agent goes from, you know, from grieving to just in this mindset of, you know, where he shuts everything down so that he can function. You know, he develops this purpose so that he can actually go on himself. And I think that that's part of the reason why he's crying at the end. It's not because anything's got accomplished. It's because he realizes that there's nothing left for him, that he has no purpose anymore, and that his life is effectively over. And I think that that's kind, anyway, I'm not going to go in, because I could talk about that forever, but I think that that's kind of the reason why. And then, but like our antagonist here is one of the scariest fuckers I've ever seen in a film, whether it's like his propensity for violence, or, you know, is how he's so easily triggered about everything. And it's, or, you know, how assured that he is about like his place, and, you know, how he's correct, and, you know, just that he is right to take whatever it is that he wants. Like, he's so scary, and some of the best acting that I've ever seen in a film, because there are times in this movie that I don't even, like, I'm not thinking about Old Boy. As fucking brilliant as Old Boy is, like, I do not see Old Boy. All I see is this psychotic piece of shit that is just wrecking everything.
No, I agree. And like, yeah, I love Old Boy, and that's why, part of the reason I watch this, because he's in it, but he's very much not that character from that film. And that just shows his diversity, because even though he's the one trying to get revenge in Old Boy, you know, I won't spoil the ending of that movie though, but I think like him flipping and being this complete like sociopath, because like that's what he is. There's the purest definition of a sociopath. He thinks he is entitled to whatever he wants. He gets it by any means necessary, which is usually violent in nature, whether it be sexual assault or just straight up murdering someone. I mean, he cuts people into pieces. Like, there's, you know, and he he does it with like a knowledge, like he's, it's scary because he's like aware of what he's doing, but not aware of how it doesn't like fit in society. Like he thinks that society is wrong. And that's like, that is something that like I can't wrap my brain around because I'm also not crazy, but like, but yeah, no, he's an absolutely terrifying like individual as outside of like, I think people like him, like in movies, like the realistic villains in horror, horror Jason, whatever we want to call this, we'll call it a horror movie. I'll let, it's your show. So it's a horror movie. Yeah. so a horror, like in horror movies, when the killer is realistic, it's more terrifying to me. Like I can rationalize a monster because they don't exist. Like, you know, Jason Voorhees is scary, but like I can get over it pretty quickly because like a mama's boy is not coming out of a lake to kill me. But like someone like him could very well exist, and that's terrifying. And his whole like the fact that he is like basically like a moralist killing machine is really effective. And he, the actor, just some of his like facial mannerisms and the way he like laughs and the way he like looks angry at things and like he, or sometimes he does some stuff like really like nonchalant. Yeah. And you're just like, this guy's like, his emotions are like all over the place, but he's still got this like stoic, like way of life that he just goes through it. And it's, yeah, it's mesmerizing watching him. Like he's an amazing actor. This is really only the two films I know him from, but those two films, like he's the star of the show in both of them. Like yes, he's not the lead in this film, but he's absolutely the star of the show in I Saw the Devil because you're paying attention to what he's doing. Like, obviously we know that the agent's going to come up and, you know, do what he does and he's going to handle it like a, you know, a revenge seeking like officer basically. But this guy's like, everything he does is different. All his killings are different. Like he hangs out with cannibals. Like this guy is like a lunatic, like to the nth degree. Like, and it was fascinating watching that. Like, you know, as I said, like, how do you kill the devil? Like, well, you know, you have to become the devil to kill the devil. And that guy is basically the devil in the flesh. And he's definitely like top tier movie villain. Like when anyone says like, who's your favorite movie villains? Like now that this is like fresh on my brain, I'm absolutely saying this guy is like up there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely like what I would call a black hole. I mean, he is definitely, all the attention is being sucked to him. I mean, one of the perfect examples of this is that scene where he picks up the woman, you know, hitchhiking, and it just gets more and more uncomfortable as it goes along. And then, you know, she gets in the car and it's just like, oh God, this is not going to end well. Yeah. And then, you know, it just erupts. Like, I mean, there, like you said, he's so nonchalant about some things. Like he just picks up his wrench, you know, and he's just casually like looking at it, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And she's asking what it is. And he's like, oh, it's, you know, a wrench. Well, I forget exactly what it is, a pole or a wrench or something like that. And he's like, oh, it's a wrench. And then just proceeds to batter her over the head with it. And it's like, there's just you know, there are several times in this, there's these scenes where there's an eruption of violence. And yeah, I mean, he is just absolutely terrifying in this.
He does it from the jump too, because when he's knocking on the first victim's like door and she's like, nah, it's okay, I'm gonna wait for the, because he's like, oh, you're really lodged in there. And she's like, oh, it's fine, I'll wait for the tow truck. And she rolls up the window and he just stares at her. Mm-hmm. Like his face doesn't move. He just has this like, and then he's like, okay. And then he like walks away and you're like, well, what the fuck was that? And then he like comes back and obviously does what he does, but like he just stares at her for like, just, it's like 1 second too long to make it uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then he just goes, okay. And then like walks away and you're just like, what the hell was that? And then so the first time I saw it, I didn't realize he was the killer the first time, cause I didn't know much about it. And so when that happened, I was just like, oh, that was weird. Maybe the killer is going to kill him and then kill her. Like, it's going to be like this thing. And then he comes back and I'm like, oh, he's just, that dude's just crazy. And then like, you know, and then he reveals himself later. But yeah, that, even that first scene where, cause he holds on to that. I don't know if it was him or if it was editing or whoever did it, but however that scene played out, he stares at her just like 1 second too long. And you're just like, all right, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's incredible in this as awful of a character he is. Like, he, as you said, he's like a black hole. He sucks up all the attention goes on him. Like, without his performance, this movie, we might not have like the great memories of it or the great opinions of it.
I 100% agree with you. All right, so we're getting close to the end now, and I want to know, though, before we get into, you know, final thoughts and all that, what's your favorite scene from this? I think I might know what it is, because it's a lot of people's favorite scene, but that's fine, because if it's what I'm thinking, it's pretty phenomenal. But there are a plethora of things in here that you can be like, you know, that this is really good or effective. But what's your favorite scene in the film?
Oh, man, because it's always going to come down to one of the violent scenes, because there's so many of them. I personally...
Wait, there's violence in this film?
Yeah, no, it's for a Disney film, this is a little much. But the... when he's ripping the cannibals, like, when he's like, I'm going to give you a permanent smile. Cause when that guy's laughing and he rips the guy's like jaw, like in half, like when he gives him the, what do they call it? The, Chelsea grin or whatever, when that happens, cause it's normally when you see that they slit the mouth and he's like, no, I'm just going to tear this guy's jaw apart. That's probably because that guy is such scum and he's like a cannibal and all that stuff. And he's laughing at her. He's like, oh, he's going to do something fun beforehand. Like he says he's going to give pleasure. And that's like, cause it's not get pleasure. He's saying he's going to give it. Mm-hmm. And that's disturbing to hear that. So right when he rips his face off, that's probably my favorite scene. Cause I'm like, all right, that's immediate justice. Cause he's like, oh, you're laughing at this. This is funny. And he does what he should do, and he just does it, and he just gets it over with. He just rips this dude's face apart and says, see you later. And I'm like, all right, cool. He handled that like right away, as he should have. So yeah, that's mine. Or the second would be the Achilles scene, just because it's so gross.
Yeah. Yeah. Both of those are like so gross. And like, yeah. I mean, I thought that might be what you were going to go with, but yeah, it like, it's so uncomfortable. Like, the first time I watched it, I'm like, there's no way they're going to do this. There's no way they're going to show it. But they did. I was like, oh, my God. it's one of those things, like, there is nothing to laugh at in this movie, but yeah. It's like so fucking crazy that you just can't help but like let this like little, from wherever that comes in your soul, that little chuckle out.
Yeah.
And I did. Yeah, I love that. It's insane. My favorite, though, one, because of the way it's filmed is so fucking cool. But at the same time, I mean, if there is just like a tiny hint of dark humor in here, mm-hmm. there is a little bit sprinkled in, but is the cab scene. The cab scene for me.
Oh yeah, yeah. That scene is really good.
Yeah, it's so insane. And I love it. Like when this movie like really, really trusts the audience to, you know, to pick up on things at times. And it does it like where, you know, the camera goes to the plaque and then it goes to there's no line in here like, oh, you're not the cab driver.
Yeah.
You know? So there's just these glances and these uncomfortable looks between the three of them. And then he just starts cracking up and talking about how it's that guy's unlucky day. And it's like, yeah, like you two fucking idiots just stumbled upon the craziest fucker in the entire world, you know, and he just knifes them up and it's just doing the 360 spin around the thing, you know, and obviously it's not, you know, I mean, that's a static shot, you know, that they're doing, you know, showing from outside the cab, but.
And blood just spraying everywhere. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there's a couple of times like, yeah, you get like these things that are over the top and normally they'd be silly, mm-hmm. but it just adds so much of it. It doesn't take anything away from the film. It doesn't make it like any less impactful. It's so fucking good. And I mean, it's one of the most perfect scenes in a movie for me. I love that cab scene.
That is a crazy scene. I don't know why I drew a blank on it, but that scene is a lot of fun. And it's like the only time in the film that you kind of like root for the antagonist. Cause like you can tell that those guys are going to do something bad. Like, and he picks up on it obviously. And yeah, I picked up on it. Like, I didn't even have to see the cab driver photo. The guy in the back seat, the fact that he was just staring at him through the rearview mirror and whatnot, I was like, oh, like, and that, I remember the first time I saw it, I thought, I'm like, well, wait a minute. Is he like, are we going to start rooting for this guy? And I thought that was going to be the moral dilemma, is that he was going to do like certain nice things. Cause then like, then he becomes like a bus driver and you're like, oh, he has like a normal, like 9 to 5. And like, he killed these guys the night before. And like, then obviously it didn't go in that direction, but like, that was the one moment in the movie you're like, you root for him in that particular scene, even though he's awful.
Yeah.
But yeah, that scene is really good.
Yeah, it's. Yeah. I mean, there's almost like a good, bad, and the ugly kind of thing going on, where they're like, it has the close ups of the knives coming out. It's just like, it's about to get fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah,
and then in a split second, it does.
Yeah. It's so good. All right. So I mean, we did not touch on. Well, I mean, we kind of touched on the plot of a little bit, but this is good. This is good. We did not spoil really that much of this film. So if there's anybody out there that has not seen this, oh my fucking God, go watch I Saw the Devil. It's so good. But before we get into our ratings, is there any final thoughts that you have?
No, I mean, it's because of its nature and it's heavy, it's not a film that I'm probably going to watch like often, because I have to be in the mood for something that's going to like make me like, because it's a bummer at the end. It's a bum out. Like, and any film that has like a bum ending usually takes like a year or two before I like rewatch it. So I'm glad it's been a while since I watched it. So I was glad that I rewatched it now, but I'll probably take some time off from it and breathe and let myself relax before I visit it again. And what'll end up happening is someone like my wife will be like, oh, I want to watch this movie. And I'll be like, okay, it's time. Like, I can watch it again. Yeah. I can allow myself to be grossed out and then bummed out, and then I will be good for a little bit more. But yeah, that's only, I mean, this movie's phenomenal. I think it needs to be in, especially if you're a revenge film type person, if you like all those stuff, like, this absolutely needs to be added to your list if you haven't seen it already. And if you have seen it already, I'm sure it's like in your top 10 revenge films of all time. Like, it has to be, because it's not only like a well done movie, it's not only like a well done revenge, it's just a well made movie in general. Like, the people behind this like took, you know, serious care and with making this film.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, whether you want to talk about, the acting, the cinematography, the music, everything in this is fucking spot on. I mean, there's that crane shot when he pulls up in the driveway at the cannibal thing, when it just like pans down and it zooms in on his face. So good. Everything in this is so good. But okay. So you're absolutely right. And I don't know what it says about my psyche, but I watch this quite a bit, probably at least twice a year. But then I have other films though that affect me that way, and I get that, like, we kind of touched on Seven does that. I hate fucking, I do not watch Seven.
It's and been... I watch Seven often, so yeah, so
yeah, so it's kind of like a, you know, whatever it is, you know, whatever it is that kind of like sticks out to you. But yeah, Seven, I don't watch a whole lot of The Devil's Rejects, even though it's a great film. I don't watch it that much, because it makes me feel bad. It just makes me feel fucking bad. Okay, that's why. But but this one, I don't know what it is, but I was gonna say I really enjoy it, you know. not in that way. I enjoy this film, everyone. But anyway, with all that being said, I mean, we kind of praised this one pretty highly. So I'm pretty sure we're gonna come up. You better get this right, Brent. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. So out of a scale of 1 to 5, what would you rate I Saw the Devil?
I would give this a 4 out of 5. Okay. I don't think it's a perfect film, because I think that the idea, because I get my frustrations on the fact that he doesn't just kill, like, it doesn't make sense to me that he would keep releasing this guy, like, especially once he starts to realize that it's hurting other people. Again, that might be the point. That might be the play on the morality. And that might've been the whole like audience dilemma. And that was, but for me, it loses a little bit because I get frustrated, because I know that if that was my wife, that dude would be dead as soon as I saw him. Like, it wouldn't, maybe I'd torture him, but like, I wouldn't, the first time I meet him is the last time I meet him, because that's the end of it. So that's the only thing but the way this movie plays out, as we were talking just now, it's like, the cinematography's there. The acting is incredible. The score is great. It's edited very well. Like, everything about this is a well, like, the people went in to make a, tough film to watch, and you know, with sensitive subject matter, with brutal, like uncut brutality. And apparently they edited a bunch of stuff to so it could even be shown. So I couldn't even imagine what the original version was. In this version, it's still super, super brutal. And you can tell that there was a lot of people behind this, that it wasn't just like, you know, we get horror movies and sometimes we get thrillers and they throw like a bullshit budget at it. And the director's not, the last thing they directed was like a music video. And you can tell when it's all said and done, it might be a fine film. We might like it, but it, we're like, man, if that got a budget, maybe a little bit better of a director, it could be so much more. And this movie seems like the so much more, like, because there was a lot of people who cared about this film were behind it. And I think that alone, like, helps it stand out. It reminds me of something that like A24 would do, but yeah, probably with like a bigger, maybe a slightly bigger, I don't know what the budget was for this film, but the, it seems like the studio that helped put this one is one of those types of studios, like an A24, where they probably were like, yeah, here, we'll give you the money and we're going to let you do what you do. And we're going to let you have your artistic expression. And it looked like that came out in this film. And I think it was, I think this director is great because, like I said, he has my favorite Asian horror film of all time, A Tale of Two Sisters, which I still think creeps me out. It's still terrifying. Although I know the plot twist and whatnot, I know, or the reveal or whatever you want to call it, like, I'm still like, oh no, like when it happens, like it's still, yeah. And I watch it all the time. So that's a testament to the director as well. All these actors should get kudos. If they didn't get any awards for this, it's a crime. Yeah. So it's just a little bit on the plot device, takes away a point, but I mean, it really is as close to a perfectly made film that I can think of. I just lose a little bit on the plot device.
No, that makes complete sense. And I love how subjective the film is, because like when I see that, it doesn't bother me. Like it doesn't make sense. Don't get me wrong. Right. It doesn't, that makes no sense, but it's like, to me, it's like the director is making that is where he's taking the audience, and twisting their expectations on what the film should be, and mm-hmm. saying, you're complicit in this violence and you're complicit in the consequences. So you're going to feel like shit when what happens at the end happens. So I kind of like that, because again, like, this movie affects me on an emotional level. And whenever something like that happens, and I'm very, it's crazy. Like, I have this dichotomy, like, I'm very mean to some films and I'm very friendly to others.
Mm-hmm. I get it. I do that too.
So this is one of the ones that I love. And so it is 5 out of 5 for me. And I'm not one of those ones that are like, I will never give I understand that there are no perfect films. I get mm-hmm. that. I'm not saying that this is a perfect film. This has flaws. And you pointed one out, and absolutely right. And there are probably other things that you can, nitpick on the film. It's not a perfect film, but it is a film that I absolutely adore and put it on the upper echelon of my watches, whether you consider it horror, whether you consider it thriller, whatever that genre that this would fall into. It is one of my favorite films of all time. So I have to give it a 5 out of 5.
No, I totally back it. If it's one of your favorite films, the 5 out of 5's come out. But and I'm not even really going to disagree with you on that. Like I said, I just have my issue with the plot device. But other than that, it really is as close to a perfectly made film. Like, there's so much good about this film from a filmmaking standpoint. Like, so if you're just a cinephile, you should watch this film just for how it's made. I mean, obviously you have to have a little bit of a strong stomach for certain scenes, but like, just watching this film from a filmmaking standpoint, like, it's all, like, I mean, you're always chasing perfection. So it's like almost perfection. It's like a really, really, really well done film. It's just, you know, you got to deal with the subject matter to get through it. But I implore most cinephiles that, you know, are a little bit tough in the stomach to take this one on.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. You were the perfect guest for this. No. Yeah. I could just see somebody like coming on, I hate your movie. And I'm like, no.
It's funny.
But yes, not just because you like the film, but you know, I'm so glad that we could finally do this. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a blast. And I'm sorry that we had the technical issues. Like, the listeners are not going to get to get the behind the scenes, but I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Sorry that the stuff happened with Gabby.
Yeah.
We're gonna figure it out one of these days.
Hey, man, that's, you know, it's what happens when you do it live. Sometimes, you know, it's technical difficulties. It happens. Like I said, oh man, what movie was it that we were talking about? Oh, it sucks because like I cut out like literally saying like, oh, that's my favorite one, and it was like, but it sounded like I said it was my favorite one. And it's like my least favorite film of like a series.
It's probably Terrifier.
Oh, it was. We were talking about the Romero stuff, and we were all bashing Survival of the Dead, like the last one, and the way it came off, the way when I cut out, it sounded like I was saying it was my favorite film, and I was like, oh no, I got to get back in there.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I love that. All right, well, before we get out of here, one more time, why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you?
So if you want to find me solo on any of the socials, it's Wren, WrenXXX. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. You add me, I'll probably add you back because I love discussing with people. That's how I met Boomer. That's how I even came across Podcasts in the Woods. And then I'm the monthly contributor on the Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks podcast. On Twitter, it's horror_guitar. On Instagram, it's Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks Pod. And on Facebook, it's Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks Podcast. I think there's threads, but I don't know. It would be linked to the Instagram anyway. And then, you know, we'll plug our friends because I'm constantly on there. And I'm actually recording again this Thursday, The House of Screams, which is follow Candy the Final Girl and everything, and House_Screams on Twitter.
Nice. And all those links, like I said, will be down in the description. You owe it to yourself. Please check out Horror Flicks Guitar Picks podcast. And Wren, I love your approach to film, your intellectual takes on different movies. It's been a lot of fun interacting with you, and I you know, looking forward to all of our interactions in the future and the interactions that we're going to have Thursday, because I will also be guesting on the House That Screams Horror podcast for
That's
Return
awesome.
Of the Living Dead 2. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, this is going to be in the future. So
yeah.
I really had a great time on that show.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you again one more time for coming out, my friend.
Oh no, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We did put this out on the socials and we got a few responses. So Movies for Days, A. Newman says, a positively engaging and engrossing meditation on the ways revenge can strip our humanity away, making the only focus to cause pain in our attacker, even if that means allowing them to go on killing. Has the killer become the only person left alive our hero can identify? Very provoking question. We kind of touched on that a little bit in this one. Cinema Trip Review says, personally, one of my favorite revenge films. I'm right there with you. Love the unique catch and release aspect of the story. And, oh, you had to put the name in there, didn't you? Choi Min-sik is fantastic, as always, portraying the villain. He sure was. It was fucking fantastic. And finally, Jonathan Bidgood says, the opening scene is beautiful and haunting. The score is fantastic. It's an annual rewatch for me. And I definitely feel that. I do watch this film over and over again just because of how brilliant and fantastic it is. It is a definite rewatch for me. I don't know about annually. It is a feel bad movie, but I say that, but yeah, I probably watch this about once a year. It's really, really good. Oh man. I hate that we had those technical difficulties earlier. We lost Gabby. Gabby, we love you. And, you know, she is definitely going to be on there the next time. You guys do not want to miss the next episode. Here's where I tease it. Gabby is getting her revenge on me because of all the shit that I have put her through and made her watch. And she is coming back at me, and it is a fucking banger. It is. It was a lot of fun to record. not so fun to watch as far as I'm concerned, but it is a film that definitely had people talking at the time and definitely had us talking. We had some pretty good takes on there. You do not want to miss Gabby's Revenge episode. That's going to be coming up next. And I think that is it for us today. So until next time. Oh God, I didn't even do that. I fucking do it every time. I'm so terrible at this. You can always reply to us just like those other wonderful people did, those other wonderful listeners, because we love hearing from you. And if you would like to interact with us, you can do so at Twitter and Instagram at or X, whatever the fuck they're calling it now, whatever. And that is at Woods Podcast One. You can also find us on Facebook. Just search for us, Podcast in the Woods. We are also on the Slasher app. So just download that Slasher app and search for us, Podcast in the Woods. And Gabby is the one that runs that. So if you want to interact with her, that is the one that she controls, and she's amazing at it. And we do also have a Patreon if you would like to search for us on there and give a little to the show. And everything that you give goes right back into the show, because we want to make the absolute best show that we can for you. And one other thing that really, really helps us is if you leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps us out, and we so appreciate it. We love you guys. We love our listeners. That is it for us tonight. So stay scary.